I spent quite a little bit of time talking about Silverlight in the last session, so we keep the slides to a minimum now. I want to show you how to get started with Silverlight, how to build a Silverlight application. Now, this is a pretty comprehensive and pretty dangerous live demo. So I don't know if it will work as intended. It rarely does. But if not, I'll just show you the finished end product. And you can download the same step-by-step demonstration later after the session if you want to play with it. It's a very nice way to get started, because everything I'm going to show you in this demo can actually be used for real business dashboards. So if you want to put any data that you might have in your SQL servers, wherever you have it, and want to put it on the map, for easier sort of understanding, then this demo will tell you how to do it. So it's a very, very nice demo. It also sort of an introduction to Silverlight for those of you who didn't have the chance or of playing with Silverlight already. So it's a very nice first step into that. All of our sessions and demos are pretty detailed today. So those are actually developer demos. So we're now leaving the level 100 overview. We're getting into level 200, 300 territory. But I think it's worthwhile to actually see how things are done rather than just hearing about it, how great the world is in our slides. So the topics for this second session, a few quick words, why use Silverlight with SharePoint. I already said most of what I wanted to say, why you should use Silverlight with SharePoint. I want to expand a little bit on the user experience aspect, because I think software user experiences are an incredibly important thing that is often overlooked when building applications. A bad user experience can make your application fail. It's as simple as that. If your users don't accept the user experience, the user interface, if it's hard to use, if they don't understand how to use these features that you're providing them in your application, then they will not be very satisfied. And I've seen many large-scale line of business applications simply fail because users were complaining so much because their experience using that application was so bad. So I think user experience is an integral part of ALM. It needs to be planned. It needs to be planned from the beginning of a software project, and it cannot be tacked on at the end. So I want to talk a few words about user experience before we go into the actual demo. The demo I'm going to show you is an example one. We're going to use a map. We're going to use a Silverlight map. We're going to put some data on that map, and then we'll integrate this map with a document stored in a SharePoint document library, and we'll show you how to retrieve those in a Silverlight application. I also want to say a few words about SharePoint Online. Has anyone had any experience with SharePoint Online yet? So that's actually a very interesting offer. Now, SharePoint, the administration part of SharePoint, is actually sometimes quite a challenge, right? Administering a SharePoint infrastructure is not an easy job. So if you don't want the hassle of administering a SharePoint infrastructure, you just want to use it, then SharePoint Online might be something for you. It's sort of a SharePoint you can rent from Microsoft. You pay around €5 per user per month, but you get the full infrastructure with team sites, with search, with portals, and everything. You don't have admin access to that SharePoint, so it's not like an on-premises SharePoint, but it's a very, very interesting offer nevertheless, because pretty soon we will be rolling out SharePoint 2010 to SharePoint Online, which also gives you things like sandbox solutions, which also gives you a few additional developer features. So if you want to build a SharePoint application, you don't want to host it in your data center on-premises, you can also host that in the SharePoint Online, and thereby having 99.999, I don't know how many nines, five nines, uptime for that SharePoint solution. So it's an interesting offer, definitely worthwhile looking at. I like it very much because for me, I usually, when I do demos, I don't want to have a local SharePoint installation because it bogs down my laptop. I always use SharePoint Online for that. We'll talk about the different ways how to deploy a Silverlight application to SharePoint. There's actually a number of ways how you can do that. And then we'll talk about the different ways how you can pull data from your SharePoint into your beautiful Silverlight application. Now, we already talked about in the first session that SharePoint is a great product. I don't need to repeat that. Very successful, great functionality, great features out of the box. But what's rarely talked about is the SharePoint user experience. And the thing about the SharePoint user experience is that it can be a challenging experience for users. Because SharePoint essentially is a web application, right? It's a web application, runs in the browser with all the inherent limitations of that web applications bring with them. Especially when you look into usability, web applications in a browser will never be as rich and functionally rich and easy to use as dedicated client applications. And I'm going to show you an example what that means on the next slide. A web user experience usually is not as smooth and rich as a desktop experience. And the ultimate in user experience is what you get from a rich client, from a rich desktop application. Features and functionalities like drag and drop, for example. Functionalities like very good integration with your desktop. Features like hardware access. All of these things are usually not present and not possible in a web user experience. Of course, sometimes you don't need them. Sometimes you want to just touch more devices. You want to touch more operating systems with your applications, and then a web user experience is obviously the way to go. But web user experiences usually target more reach than richness, right? So if we look at a typical example of that, it's always, when you build a user experience for an application, it's always a trade-off. It's always a trade-off decision. Do you want maximum reach? Do you want to touch every device, every operating system, every phone maybe out there? Then you want maximum reach. You can target all of these devices by using, for example, HTML and DHTML, but if you do that, you sacrifice richness. Richness means those features that usually are only present in desktop applications. Richness also means different media types, audio, video, animation. All of these nice things that we would like to see in applications are usually not possible when you use HTML or DHTML. So that's the trade-off, either maximum reach or maximum richness or something in the middle. Now here we have one example. Who here is using Outlook Web Access? Okay, who's using Gmail, Hotmail, any webmail? Probably everybody. Now the question is, would you throw away your desktop Outlook client and just use Web Access or just use webmail? Probably not, right? And that is because the ultimate user experience is still in that desktop client. It gives you all the functionalities, all the features. It's the quickest, the fastest. You don't have a back button or anything like that to throw you off. So the ultimate in user experience is still on the desktop. Whereas all the web experiences are somewhere in the middle. And the SharePoint user experience is squarely in the middle here. Actually, in 2010, the SharePoint user experience, the web interface, has been overhauled quite significantly, and it's much, much better than in 2007. But it's not a desktop application. It's not a rich, ultimate rich experience, right? And that is where Silverlight is so interesting, because Silverlight is even more in that direction here. With a technology like Silverlight, you can build features that previously were only available in the rich desktop clients. So an addition of Silverlight to your SharePoint application can give you a much, much richer user experience, a smoother, better performing, higher functionality user experience than just a web application experience. So that is, for me, the ultimate reason why Silverlight and SharePoint are so well made for each other. SharePoint has a good user experience out of the box. There's no doubt about that. But if you want to go a little bit further, if you want to push the boundaries, if you want to excite and delight your users, then Silverlight is a very nice ingredient for that. So, and the question whether the SharePoint user experience is problematic, there is no question. It's not a problem. Most SharePoint users accept and are okay with the SharePoint user experience, right? Because it is very good. But there is a certain need for rich, interactive, and elegant line of business applications on top of SharePoint. We already see that need growing, the need for more than just a website. right? The need for more than just a web interface. And this need will grow in the future. And the example of the map dashboard is just one of these examples, right? Because to build something similar in HTML is certainly possible, but it will not be as rich, it will not be as fulfilling, it will not be as smooth as the one we built in Silverlight. So with that, let's go and see how this is actually done. So can you hold the microphone for me, please? Because otherwise I'll be a one-handed demo man, and that is not a good thing. Just can you hold it up to here? Is this working now? Okay, let's try that. The demo is hard enough as it is without with two hands, and with one hand it's probably impossible. Okay, can everybody hear me? Okay, good, good. So what I did, I've already opened a empty Silverlight application project in Visual Studio. And when you build a Silverlight application for the first time and set up this project for the first time, you can see that it has actually two sub-projects here. There's the Silverlight application itself, which you can see. It has some files with the extension of XAML, X-A-M-L. And then there's sort of a simulated web server, because your Silverlight application will always be deployed to a web server. So the setup in Visual Studio gives you that simulated web server environment. And your Silverlight application, when you hit F5, when you compile it, will be compiled into one XAP file. So a Silverlight application is just one file. That's all you need to put onto your SharePoint. Of course, if you use images, if you download XML files, anything you download into your Silverlight application needs to be on that SharePoint as well. But in its most simple form, a Silverlight application is just one file. Now, a Silverlight application user interface is built in XAML. Now, XAML is an XML file. It's a description language for user interfaces. So everything you put into that XAML file will end up on the screen of your users, if you so will. Now, XAML is very, very powerful. So in XAML, you can design anything you want. You can build any user interface you want. You can actually, one of the hallmarks, one of the basic functionalities of Silverlight is that you can redesign any UI element and make it look and act like anything you want. So if you don't want square, rectangular, gray buttons, you can make them circular, glowing, whatever you want. There's no limit to what you can do. This also means that it's probably not a developer's job to do that, right? In many, many cases, the best Silverlight applications, the same is true, by the way, for Windows Presentation Foundation, which is sort of the desktop brother of Silverlight, you usually have designers supplying the artwork for the interface. There are many things you can do as a developer, though. You don't need to be a designer to build a beautiful interface, a very usable interface, but in many, many cases, you might want to enlist the help of an external designer who gives you some of the artwork for the interface. Also, XAML tends to get very complex very quickly. It's a lot like HTML. If you compare it to HTML, if you understand HTML, you also will understand XAML. Right? But a more complex, even a pretty simple layout in XAML has lots and lots of XAML lines of XAML code. And you don't write that by hand. You don't want that. You don't want to type that in. That is why we also have a design surface in Visual Studio. You can switch between design and XAML view and work in either way. We also have a dedicated tool for working with XAML, which I'm going to show you in just a minute. So the first thing we need for our little application is a user interface. Now, I've created already that user interface, so I'm just going to copy and paste that. Actually, what you will see is that I'm going to do a lot of copy and pasting today, because we want to have a nice and sexy user interface, and we don't want to build that from scratch, because that actually takes quite a bit of time. Okay, so let me just start with my copy and paste adventure here. And let's just grab my UI layout, and you're going to see, you already can see that what I'm copying and pasting here is a lot of XAML, right? Usually that XAML is created by tools, so don't worry, you don't need to write that from hand. But there are many, many developers who never venture beyond the XAML view in Visual Studio. So for those people, they really spend a lot of time simply writing XAML code like that. Which, it's probably not everybody's cup of tea. With Silverlight, there's also a ton of third-party controls. So Silverlight out of the box brings with it around 75 to 80 UI controls, things like buttons, things like data grids, things like list boxes. But there's also already a huge number of free controls available. So if you're a developer, you're looking for interesting designs, there are a couple of controls you might be interested in. One of them are the blacklight controls. You can see that I'm using them here. The blacklight controls can be downloaded from CodePlex. They give you very sexy looking user interface controls, which you just drop into your application and use. So the thing I'm going to do here, I'm just going to add a reference to these blacklight controls. And I'm also using another control, which is the Bing Maps Silverlight control. Now that one, I'm a huge fan of the Bing Maps control, especially the Silverlight one. Now if you've ever worked with the Ajax-based mapping controls of Google Maps or Bing Maps, you know that you can sort of put push pins on top of that map and design it any way you want. But it's actually quite hard to do. You have to deal with style sheets, you have to deal with HTML, and a performance, if you have much, much data on that map, is also not the best. The Bing Maps control gives you a much, much easier way of putting anything you want on top of that map. I'm going to show you that in just a few minutes. Let me just add my references here. Let's see, where did I put them? Here we are. So here's my map control, and there are the blacklight controls. Again, you can get those blacklight controls from CodePlex. And especially for SharePoint, there are some really nice things that you can do with those blacklight controls. Let me just quickly build my application. And it's complete. And if I switch now to my design mode here, you can see what all that XAML does that I've just copied in. Already gives me a quite nice little design. So the blacklight controls specifically give you one UI control, which is called the drag-drop panel. That gives you a number of panels that automatically resize. You can move them around on the screen. They're very much like web parts, right? You can see them as a web part container. But from a usability point of view, that web part, these drag drop panels are already much more interactive, right? They have nice little animations. They have a nice design. So it's much, much better than any HTML or Ajax-based stuff. So we have our basic layout, and actually that's a pretty simple layout because it's just some black gradients which I put in the background, and then I put the drag-drop panel on top of that. So we have another tool for working with XAML. Even though Visual Studio now has a design surface for XAML, there's another tool which is much, much better when you're doing anything with user interfaces, and it's called Expression. Has anyone played with the Expression tools? A couple of people, yes. For the others, if you're starting out with Silverlight, Visual Studio is still the tool to use for that, but you would do yourself a disfavor if you don't use Expression as well, because the Expression tools actually make designing interfaces fun. Right? So I'm going to open my page here, my page in Expression Blend, and I'm going to add my map to it using Expression Blend, and then I'm going to put a navigation into my user interface as well. So let's just wait until it fires up. And again, Expression Blend originally was designed as a design tool for user interfaces. That is why it looks quite differently from Visual Studio. Because somebody thought designers always want black interfaces, dark interfaces. That's why it looks like it does. But it's nevertheless a very, very useful tool for anyone who's building Silverlight or WPF applications. So, and one of the most useful and helpful panels in Expression Blend is this Objects and Timelines panel here. Because your XAML layout is ultimately a hierarchy of objects nested inside of other objects. And as you can see, our layout is fairly simple. We have a number of nested elements here and here. But if you need to keep track of that, only looking at XAML code, it's going to be very hard for you. It's not an easy job to work with XAML without the help of these kinds of tools. So let me just show my drag-drop panel, my information container. Here's my map panel, and you can see that my map panel is actually here. Here's where my map should end up. And I'm just going to use the asset palette of Expression Blend now to grab a map control. which I have here. And then I can simply drag and drop this map control into my map panel. And now I have a Bing map here. Right? You can see that the editing experience is also very visual. And if I press F5 in Expression Blend, it will compile my application, fire up my simulated web server, and I can already see where my user interface is taking me. So let's just quickly see if everything looks right. My computer is not the fastest. I'm talking to my manager to give me a faster one. And as you can see, it's sort of stuck somewhere. There it comes. And we can already see our layout. So this is the drag-drop panel. As you can see, I only have one drag-drop panel here. I could have as many as I want, and I could drag them all around, reorder them. Again, that's a free control. It doesn't cost you anything. Just download it, use it. Very nice. Also, it has these nice animations here, zooming in, zooming out. And those are the little things that make your layouts really stand out, because you cannot easily do something like that in stock HTML. You could do it in DHTML, AJAX, but still, there are some things. It's much easier here because it's built in right from the scratch. If you look at the map control, that one is also very, very smooth. You can see that I can zoom in, zoom out. Again, that's a very different story from those AJAX-based map controls. So if you're wondering about this error message here, if you want to use the Bing map control, that one is free. You can use it in any of your applications. You just need to sign up for a free developer account at this URL here. As you can see, it even works without the developer account, but of course you will have this annoying message in the middle. We use this developer account to keep track of the usage of the service. Actually, the service is free up to a certain limit of calls, up to a certain limit of bandwidth. But I've never hit that, and I'm a heavy user of that. If you have a customer-facing website with millions of users, probably at some point they will want money for that. But for line-of-business applications, I don't see that coming. In case you're wondering, the application I showed you before with the red map is using exactly the same Bing Maps control. Right? It looked very differently because you can replace the default map tiles with your own design. So you can design the map any way you want. And that's a pretty funky way. I'm not going to show you in this demo how to do that, but I can direct you to a tutorial. So if you want not all this level of detail, for example, for a business application, you don't want all these countries, you could put in your own graphics, make it look very, very funky. So now we need a navigation for our application because we want to download some data. We want to have some buttons for people to interact with. So that's the next thing I'm going to put into my little application here. So I have a navigation container here. You can always switch between XAML and Design View also in Expression Blend. So it's not much different from Visual Studio here. I would say for working with UI, Expression Blend is the better choice, but it's really up to you. There's many, many functionalities in Visual Studio as well. So I'm going to do a little bit of copy and pasting again. And I'm going to copy my navigation element. Now, that navigation element is a pretty simple one. It's essentially just three buttons. And I said before, there's no rule how a user interface can look. You can redesign any UI or control any way you want. So even though it's just three buttons, I spent a little bit of time changing the visual appearance of those buttons, which is also very, very simple. Right? Expression Blend makes it simpler than Visual Studio does. Basically, what you're doing is you're creating control templates which define the look and feel of UI controls, and Expression Blend gives you tools for that. You can drill into any control and rip out the default look and feel, put in your own look and feel. Very simple to do. Again, there's many tutorials, and we also have a tutorial for this application where we tell you step by step how to do exactly that. Apart from the different look and feel, these are just standard controls. So it's a standard button with the standard events of a button and so on. So we have a nice interface. By the way, just to complete that interface, so we have our map display here. We have a list box here, which is currently empty, but this list box will later contain the contents of document libraries. So later on we're pulling documents from a certain document library. We're populating this list box, and you can select a document by clicking on it and open that document. Right? So that later is reserved for the SharePoint integration part that we're going to do during the later stages of this demo. Okay, so now that we have the user interface, I'm going to save all, and we're going to go back to Visual Studio. That was Blend's appearance for today. In reality, you will probably switch between Visual Studio and Blend quite a number of times. At least I do when I build applications. But everybody has their own sort of way of working. Everybody has their same own preferences. So now we need some functionality for our application. It's a very good way. I have seen many projects where the team starts from a UI. So they build the static UI first, and then they add step by step the functionality. It also works the other way around. So I could build my application without any nice design and then just take the front end and redesign it any way I want. One of the really big strengths of Silverlight is the complete separation between UI and functionality. A developer can build the functionality in C# while the designer or anyone else is working in the XAML files, and they will not interfere with each other. That's a very, very nice way of working together, because you can sort of farm out the different tasks to different people. So in this case, what we want is we want to have some event handlers on our buttons. And let's just see if we can find our buttons in our huge amount of XAML. As you can see, you don't want to write that by hand. Actually, in Visual Studio, you have a... Let me see if I can find that. It's probably in the other... there's many, many windows in... Here it is. You also have the document outline, the tree of the XAML in Visual Studio. And if you mouse over here, you can see the individual elements in a little screen. And then you can drill down into all the individual elements. So our buttons are in the navigation layout. And here they are. So button, left round button. We'll start with the middle round button, with the reset button first. And as you can see, it's highlighted in the XAML here. What you also can see is that it's a good idea to have a larger screen resolution than 1024 by 768. The bigger, the better, with all those tools and document windows. So we just add a click event handler, and we navigate to that event handler. And now it's copy and paste time again. So I'm going to just copy a few snippets of code. We'll start by resetting the map. Now, the map control brings with it quite a large API. And you can understand, it's pretty easy to understand. So you have different modes. You have a road mode for the road view. You have aerial view. You have site, all these fancy aerial pictures. You can center the map on any location. You need to give the map latitude and longitude. That's also later important if you want to put something on the map. You need to supply latitude and longitude for elements to appear on the map. And then we set it to a certain zoom level. Since we're using the map, we also need the map DLL. We also need the using statements. I'm also just going to copy and paste those. And we need a reference to system XML link, because that's what we're later going to use to parse data that we're downloading to put on our map. So let me just add my reference here. Add reference. And let's go to systemxml.link. Let's see where it is. And here we are. Okay, so if we build our application now, we should have no errors. Why do I have errors? Okay, let's see what's going on. Okay. I forgot to rename my map. Actually, a good point, because the only connection between front-end XAML and C# code is the individual name of each individual element. So if you're putting a map on the screen, you need to give it a name, which I didn't do in my previous step. Otherwise, you will not be able to access it from code. It's as basic as in any other .NET sort of development job. It's the same thing here. So let me just fix that quickly. So let's go to my map. Here we are. Here is my map. Let's just quickly give it a name and call it my map. Okay, so now we should be fine. And now it works. So pretty simple. We have just a bit of functionality on our button that will reset our map over Europe, zoom in a little bit, but it will start simply. So if you do that, you can see how smooth and nice this interaction actually works. So now for a little bit more complex, we want to have some data in our application. And there's many ways how you can get data into a Silverlight application. The simplest way is undoubtedly simply downloading a file. In this case, we're using an XML file from the web server and then plotting that on top of our map. So let's see our XML file here. You can, of course, substitute also a web service call for that. You could connect to a database for that. There's not much difference. All the code here is boilerplate code that is probably used by every Silverlight application out there. Now, our XML file has some information for each element we want to put on this map. This XML file contains every country in the world and some information about that country. So, for example, its capital city, but also the location of the capital city. You can see that we have latitude and longitude here. Here's latitude and longitude, and that's very important information because whenever you put something on this map control, you need to provide latitude and longitude for that. The rest will be done for you. So let's go back and simply put in our download code, and we'll wire that up to the left button. So let's go to our navigation layout. Here's our left button. So we'll just add an event handler here and create a new one. And now we'll put in some code in order to download our XML file. All right, as you can imagine, I'm not going to write that from scratch. So I have a helpful snippet once more. Let me go there, which is this one here. I'm going to talk about what this thing does in just a minute. It's also pretty straightforward, pretty simple. Usually this kind of code is what you learn in the first hour of a Silverlight training class. So let's just make this a bit bigger. This, first of all, when you click the button, it clears the map. So if anything has been displayed on the map, it will be taken away. Then we'll open a web client session, which is a standard way of uploading and downloading from a Silverlight application. Silverlight applications always transfer data asynchronously. So in this case, you get event handlers when the download has successfully completed. You also get an event handler when the download has failed. We're just using the completed event handler. So when my application has downloaded the XML file, I can then pass that, take out what I want, and connect it to my user interface elements. Pretty straightforward. Again, it's surprising how much of this boilerplate code can be used in real-world applications, even though it's so simple. We're doing some parsing here to find the XML file. I'll need to change that because later the XML file resides on my SharePoint. So obviously I would need to put the URL to my SharePoint document library where I'm storing the XML file. But all in all, it's pretty straightforward and no problem at all. What we're missing right now is our download string completed event handler. So I'm just going to copy that guy as well. And this one is where the real meat lies. So let me just download that. Here we are. Let me just copy that, sorry, not download, and just place it here. And this one is a little bit more complex, but easy to understand nevertheless. So whenever the XML file has been downloaded, we get access to the stream, and then we can reconstruct the XML document and parse it using link to XML. Now, link to XML is a very, very nice thing. Has anyone played with that? Link to XML allows you to query XML documents just like you would with SQL and then extract what you need. So in our case, we're just extracting the latitude, longitude, the country name, the capital city, and then we're constructing a URL. So because we want to be able to go to Wikipedia entry for that particular country from our map display. And then it creates the URL to the flag image, which are also hosted on our web server. Now, the real interesting thing is what happens here. So we iterate through all of the results, and we create a new layer on top of the map. And in that layer, we're placing a push pin. A basic push pin control just is a push pin, but you can substitute this push pin for any user control you create. If you think about anything you can build in XAML, any UI you can build in XAML, you can put as a push pin on the map. And it doesn't really matter what's in there. You can have videos on the map. You can have deep zoom, zooming images in there. You can put anything there, including things like charts, graphs, and so on. And that's a really, really, really powerful metaphor, because it allows your map to be a container for really, really anything. And if you think about how much of the data we work with every day is connected to geographic locations, it's quite interesting. I challenge you to find some data in your databases which has no correlation to geographic data. So basically, you could put anything on the map, because so much we do and deal with every day is connected to maps. Right? But again, I'm getting carried away. I'm a big fan of maps. When I was a little geek, I had my whole room plastered with maps from all over the world. I think that never goes away. And there's other ways of visualizing all of that, of course. So finally, what we need is our items collection here. So I'm just going to copy and paste that as well. And then we should be done. Also pretty simple. As you can see, it's a pretty simple application in essence, but most of these demos are. Okay, so now we're complete, and before we go, let's just add one more piece of functionality, and let's add the full screen functionality as well. So you can put any Silverlight application into full screen. That's a very nice feature. But for that, I'm going to need another event handler, and we'll put it on the full screen image. And we'll use the mouse left button down, which is whenever somebody clicks on that full screen image, we want this application to go to full screen. All right, let's see, do I have everything? I think so. Let's run it, see what goes on. So here's our application. Let's first reset over Europe. Let's download our push pins. So you can see push pins appear almost instantaneously. And you can also see it's a lot of push pins here, right? Of course, push pins themselves are not very helpful. So the next step for us is to actually make them meaningful, which means creating a user control with the data we want to display and substituting that for the push pins. Let's just see if our full screen thing is working. It's not, so we look at that a little bit later. That sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. Probably depends on where I actually copy and paste it. Well, okay, so now let's look at these push pins. I said before that push pins can be anything. So here is our push pin. This is the line that creates individual push pins for every layer. So the first thing we need to do now is to add a user control to serve as a push pin. So I'm just going to add a new item here. I'm going to take a Silverlight user control. I'm going to name that simple pop, since it's a simple pop-up, like that. And as you can imagine, I already have some copy and paste XAML code for that, which I'm just going to drop in there. Usually, if you don't have copy and paste, it takes a bit longer to create that, as you can imagine. So let's just take that and drop that in here, like that. And if we go to design mode, you can see that our simple pop-up is actually very, very simple. We have one image, which is the flag of the country. We have some text elements here. There's the URL to the Wikipedia. There's the capital city, and we have a title here. So if we go now, go back to our main page and simply comment the push pin line and uncomment the simple pop line, that's all it takes. And if we run our application now, it should actually look much, much nicer. So now we have a very funky, small, little Silverlight application. Let's just see if it works. And there it is. So you can see these are simple push pins, but of course there can be many, many more complex ones. If you ever wanted to explore the world, probably would be a good idea to hide certain push pins. But for now, we're fine with that. So now that we have that, let's put that on a SharePoint and interface that with SharePoint data. Now the scenario for the SharePoint application is that I have a document library which additional information documents about each and every country. And whenever somebody clicks on this little flag icon, I want these documents to be populated in this list box here. So that's the end thing we want to do with our SharePoint application. But before we do that, I have a couple more slides. Hopefully from that already you see that Silverlight is actually, it is pretty simple. If you're a .NET developer, the only thing you probably is new for you is all that messing around with XAML. But there's many, many things out there like the blacklight controls, like other controls on CodePlex, which take away a lot of the work of designing a very nice user interface. And there's also a ton of nice tutorials out there, which will help you create nice user interfaces very, very quickly. Now, I already talked a little bit about SharePoint Online. The thing is, everything I show you today, Silverlight works already with SharePoint Online as it is today. Today, SharePoint Online is basically at MOS 2007 without admin access. So you have access to team sites, you have all the things that a team site, site collection owner might have, but you don't have admin access. So you cannot build or modify anything on that online SharePoint. However, by putting Silverlight on top of that and using Silverlight to pull data, aggregate data, mash up data, you already have a pretty powerful sort of environment for building lightweight business applications. It's not full development access, but it can take you actually quite a long way. In a couple of weeks, I think, we're very, very shortly before releasing the next version of SharePoint Online, you will get SharePoint 2010 and all the additional features both for Silverlight and for development. Most notable the Sandbox Solutions feature. We'll show you what you can do with Sandbox Solutions in the next session after this one, but suffice it to say, SharePoint Online is actually a very viable development environment for these kinds of applications that we're showing you today. Again, if you look at that, you can sign up for that. There's, a 3-month trial also. It's a very, very nice environment to just, for example, playing around with Silverlight on SharePoint without being forced to install your own SharePoint server on your machine. I'm not going to go through that slide. Even for larger applications, larger businesses, there's a lot to be said for having SharePoint in the cloud because it takes away a lot of the administrative overhead. You don't need to make sure that your servers are running. You don't need to sort of patch them and so on. So that's one of the primary drivers why even big businesses are actually investing in SharePoint Online today. So deploying our Silverlight application to SharePoint. So we built our Silverlight app. Now we want to put it on a SharePoint. There's actually a number of choices you have. As I said before, our Silverlight application is just one file. It's a zap file. You need to put it somewhere. The simplest way would be to dropping it into a document library and then referencing it in a web part. Now, if you put it in a document library, people can modify or accidentally delete it. So there's other choices as well. You can put it also in the layouts folder. You can put it in the Hive directory. You can put it anywhere where it's accessible through a dedicated URL. That's the first thing. You need to put the zap on the SharePoint. Simple. And then you need to display this zap file. You need to instantiate the Silverlight plugin and run this application. Now, since Silverlight applications are hosted in web pages, that's a bunch of HTML. It's an object tag that will instantiate and run your Silverlight application. You need to put that Silverlight HTML into the page. Now, in SharePoint 2007, there is no dedicated Silverlight web part. You have to either build it yourself, which is not hard, or you can take the quick and dirty way of simply copying and pasting the HTML into a content editor web part. That's actually very doable. We do it a a lot of times. Simply put in a content editor web part, put in the object tag, point it to your Silverlight ZAP file, and you're ready to go. Very, very lightweight, no admin access required. Again, something that's pretty simple to do. In 2010, your life is much, much easier. You have a Silverlight web part where you simply put in the URL to the ZAP file, and that's it. And with the development tools, in the next session, you'll see that Silverlight applications can also automatically be deployed as part of a WSP to SharePoint. Once you have your Silverlight application on there, it's just hosted on SharePoint, that's fine. But usually you want to do something with the data in SharePoint from your Silverlight application. And there's also a number of ways how you can do that. Probably the simplest one, which is not really integration, it's cheating, to be honest, is simply using the RSS feeds of each and every list and library. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but it's actually surprisingly powerful. If you just want to simply pull in a list or library into a Silverlight app, you just subscribe to the RSS feed and put it into your Silverlight app. The Blacklight controls also give you a dedicated control for that. They give you what's called a syndication feed list box. You simply drop that list box into your application, enter the feed URL, and then your Silverlight application will display this RSS feed. Now again, this session today is about going from the simplest to the more complex, and it doesn't get any simpler than that. So if you just want to put together a quick mock-up of a SharePoint UI, you can use this syndication feed list box, maybe together with a drag-drop panel, and you'll be up and running in like 10 minutes. Right? Then in 2010, you have REST and WCF access, which you can use from Silverlight. But SharePoint had a web services API quite a time back. In MOS 2007, the web services API, for example, lists.asmx, was the only way to access data inside of SharePoint from outside of the SharePoint UI. So that is a backwards compatible way. You need to mess around with web services quite a lot, which is doable, but it's actually much, much better now. The problem with the SharePoint web services in 2007 is, first of all, authentication. Second of all, they're not very well documented. So there's a huge amount of web services available to basically do a lot of things in SharePoint. But it's really hard to figure out what is exactly doing what. Right? So in 2010, we have a much, much more interesting way, which is the client object model. The client object model, the one I talked about this in the session this morning, is a way for you to abstract, has been built to abstract away lots of the complexity of the web services access. So the client object model is basically a copy of the server object model, so you get your SP sites, your SP web, and everything, and you can use that inside of your Silverlight application. It's also much better when it comes to conserving bandwidth and traffic. So it will only issue requests over the line if everything has been set up. So it's actually a very economic way of getting data out of SharePoint. A few other ways, you can also pass data from HTML to Silverlight if you want to do that. That in SharePoint is interesting. If you just want to have the logged in user's name in your Silverlight application, you can simply extract that from the HTML of the hosting page, put it into your Silverlight application, and that is very, very often done. It's done through something called init params. We're not going to show that today, but it's also a viable way. Of course, you can call any kind of external web service, like connect to anywhere, and of course, you can download resources directly. So there's many, many ways of how to access things that are stored in SharePoint. So let's do that now. Let's first of all deploy our application to our SharePoint, and then wire it up with our SharePoint data. So the first thing we need to do is to upload our ZAP file to a document library. That's pretty simple. Let me just close all my folders here. Don't need that, don't need that. And I have actually here a Roadshow demo team site. If you haven't seen the UI of SharePoint 2010 yet, I doubt that anyone hasn't seen that, but it has been much overhauled when you compare it to the previous versions. So, for example, we have something for in-page editing. You can just edit anywhere. You don't need to add web parts anymore. You just type and type. It's like a wiki in that regard. So, also, we have the ribbon everywhere now. If it's successful in Office, it's also successful in SharePoint. And it's in general, it's much, much cleaner. It's not as sort of convoluted as the previous UI in SharePoint 2007. From a customization point of view, it's much, much easier to have custom pages now. If you're doing a lot of those customizations, it's also now much, much better documented, so you don't have to search around for which style sheet does what and so on. So let's go. In our Roadshow demo site, I have two document libraries, one for my ZAP file and one for country information, which contains assorted documents for each and every country. We'll need that a little bit later. For now, we'll go into the ZAP document library. And this one is basically an exact copy of what's in my folder here, in my client bin folder here. On my simulated web server, I have a folder which has flags for each and every country. All those fancy images must come from somewhere. Here's our country data XML file and, of course, our Silverlight ZAP application. So I already uploaded the flags because it's quite a lot, and I already uploaded the country data XML file. So the only thing that's missing is my Silverlight ZAP file. I need to make some changes first because I want to retrieve the country data from the SharePoint. So I just copy the URL for that and put that into my download code here. So let's just quickly do that. Where is it? Here it is. Let's just comment that out, quick and dirty, copy my URL, and of course we need that. Now that is actually the most annoying thing about building Silverlight applications for SharePoint, because in order to be able to run that, I have to first upload it, I have to make it run on the SharePoint and so on. You'll see an easier way of doing that in the next session where we'll deploy that automatically as part of a WSP. So it's a much more integrated development experience. I'm just doing the sort of quick and dirty way here. So there's going to be a lot of uploading required. Okay, let's quickly build my ZAP file. And then I'm just going to copy that into the document library. All right, so let's open this folder. Let's just copy that to my desktop. Lots of mousing around required here, and go back to my ZAP and simply upload the Silverlight application to my document library. Let's just browse here and go to our ZAP file. This ZAP file now is approximately, I think, 450 kilobytes in size. I haven't optimized it in any way, so there's things you can do to make it even smaller. We've ducked down this particular application to about 65 kilobytes in size with all the controls included, so that's a pretty small size for this kind of an application. So here's our Silverlight ZAP file, so I'm just going to copy the shortcut here as well. And now I'm going to create a new hosting page for my Silverlight app. So let's just add a new page here. Let's call it Portugal, so we can actually see it. And then we just add the Silverlight web part to that page, which we can simply do by using the ribbon. All right. The Silverlight web part is in media and content. Here's the Silverlight web part, just add that. Now it asks me for the URL to my ZAP file. Of course, you don't need to use the HTTP fully qualified one. I'm just doing that for quickness sake here. And if I press OK, it should already load my little application. And there it is. Of course, I should make it a little bit larger. So let's just set some properties on the Silverlight web part. We want to have a height of 600. Unfortunately, the Silverlight web part is still not 100% dynamic, which means you will have at least one fixed size for your Silverlight web part. I would love it if it were just expanding 100% and 100%. Unfortunately, it doesn't do that. So we'll have to at least put one fixed pixel size in there. And we're done. So we're just saving our page. And now we can beta test, see if it works. So the reset obviously will work. See if my countries download. there they are. It's now coming from the SharePoint. So that's the first step. Now we can continue on building this integration. I probably need to fix my full screen. You can already see how even in this small application, full screen would be very, very helpful. We'll look at that a little bit later. So we have deployed our Silverlight application to the SharePoint. Not very difficult to do that. Now let's look at the changes we need to make in order to be able to access the SharePoint data from the Silverlight application. So just to show you what I want to do is, whenever somebody clicks on any of these flag bullets here, I want the list box to populate with the appropriate documents for that country only. Right. So it's a fairly simple query. We just query a certain document library. We query all documents that contain the country name, and then we inject that into the list box. All of that code resides in the simple pop in the pop-up. Right? It has nothing to do with the map. It's all triggered from the pop-up. So that's the first thing we need to do. First, let's try the simple thing. Let's try the feed control and subscribe to an RSS feed. Since it's so simple, it should be quick and easy to do that. So for that, I'll actually simply go again to Blend. And simply add the syndication feed control and subscribe to an RSS feed of the announcements of my team site. I actually like to spend time on that, even though it's so simple, because we all can use simple solutions, right? You don't want to sort of write a lot of code for just a quick mock-up or things like that. And from my own experience inside of Microsoft, if you have a quick mock-up of a Silverlight-enabled team site, show that to your customers, your manager, they're going to like, oh, that's great. And you only spend like 15 minutes building that. So that's a nice thing. Okay, so let's just give Blend a few more seconds to fire this up. What I could do in the meantime is actually prepare the stage for... No, let's do that. Let's do that step by step. Okay, so we have our main grid here. I think the audio is getting a little bit scratchy. So here we are. Let's go to the main grid. We have the information container, which has the list box in it. Let's just hide the map for now. We don't need that. Just are interested in that area here. And I can, below my list box, I'm just going to place this syndication feed list box, which I can search for like that. It's again, it comes with the blacklight controls. I'll just drop this below the list box. And then I can set the RSS feed right here on the right-hand side in the properties. It's down here. And the only thing I need to grab is from my little demo site, the RSS feed for the announcements, which is here. And you can grab that RSS feed from here and just copy and paste the URL. Just give it a second. All right. Copy. And paste this guy here. And that's actually all that is required, because the control does all the heavy lifting for you, which is nice. So let's continue here. Now, I said it before, there's an old-fashioned way of doing things, and there's a new way of doing things. The old-fashioned way involves using the web services that were there since SharePoint 2007. They are always available in the same URL. It's vti-bin-lists.asmx. This will take you to the WSDL for that, for those services. And every team site gives you that access. It's on every, whether it's SharePoint Online, whether it's on-premise, whether it's, doesn't really matter. Any team site gives you that. And we can make use of that and simply pull it into Visual Studio. So we generate a service reference to that web service here. And then we can make use of that in our Silverlight application. So let's just wait until it retrieves that. All right. So we call that list service. And now it's ready to be used in our Silverlight app. Let's just wait until the service reference has been created. Sometimes that doesn't work. This is when things get interesting. Yep. OK. let's just remove the service model, re-edit, and then we can try it again. Here we are. And let's see if we can regenerate and update. All right, that's much better. Just one warning is remaining. I'll talk about that a little bit later if I still have time. It's an important warning, but nothing that will trip us up now. So now let's modify our simple pop and make it pull some data down from the SharePoint. Again, copying and pasting. I'm a very good copy and paste developer, but I actually wrote that stuff myself, so I'm not quite that clueless. Okay, let's just stuff that stuff in here in our simple pop user control, and also copy and paste the proxy class in here, which needs to go there. If anyone has built SharePoint applications already, you probably know all that, most likely, because, again, it's a simple thing, the simple way of doing that, and the only way, really. So let me just copy that as well. So I have one event handler load SharePoint, and what this event handler, what this thing does is simply connect to SharePoint, enumerate all the lists and libraries. You can see that I'm connecting to my Roadshow server here. It's going through all the libraries on the server, and then it's injecting those libraries into the list box on the right-hand side. Also, it's asynchronous, obviously, since it's a web service, so we also have this event handler that we need to copy in there as well. So let me just go there. It's this guy here. And here we are. Let's copy that. And that should do it. Yeah. The last thing we need is to wire this up to our little flag image. So we go back to the XAML, simple pop XAML. And we'll just add the mouse left button down event handler to the image, which is this guy here. Let's just go to XAML. And we mouse left button down, and we wire this up here, build our application. All right. And now we need to deploy that again to our SharePoint. So let's simply upload that. And just copy it to my desktop. As you can see, this is a dangerous demo, because you're doing a lot of stuff, but it's actually building an application rather than just some showing some features. Okay, so let's go to our ZAP folder and add our document, browse, and here we are. Okay. And now when we run that, we should first of all in our application see the announcements list. All right, let's just quickly go to reset, load our countries, and then see if it works. So here down there is our syndication feed list box. Okay, I should take the Portugal announcement. But as you can see, pretty simple, pretty nice, pretty straightforward. Works the same way with document libraries as well. Now let's see if we can get this running. It's working. And there it is. So these are all the lists on my SharePoint. And this is one way of doing it. It's the old-fashioned way. That one works with 2007 exactly the same way. Now let's look at the new way, how we do it in SharePoint 2010. Now in SharePoint 2010, we have, I mentioned it a couple of times, we have this nice thing called the client object model. The client object model for Silverlight is two DLLs, which you need to reference in your Silverlight application. And then you have access to basically the same features you have on the server. So you can have your SP web, SP sites, you can iterate through the collections, and you can make use of them without having service references, without messing around with web services. It's still using the web services in the background, though. But for you as a developer, much of that complexity is abstracted away. And what's most important, I think, is that it also handles authentication for you. It's a basic pass-through authentication, so you can put your Silverlight application anywhere, doesn't really matter, and still access SharePoint once you supply the correct authentication. So for corporate line of business applications, for example, you can have the front end on a web server somewhere in your intranet, but still have the data in the SharePoint in the back end, and your users will never be aware of what's happening. Right? That's a very, very nice way of really abstracting away all the SharePoint stuff from your users. This is the way it looks. It's actually pretty straightforward. This one is the same code that we're using for our web services to query a certain document library, executing a camel query and getting a result back. The only difference here is that it's also asynchronous. So Silverlight does all transfers asynchronous. So again, you will have two event handlers on success, on failure, and you can put your code accordingly into those event handlers. But that is really all there is to know about the SharePoint client object model. You're setting a context, client context. You're querying which list you want. In this one, we want, that's actually wrong. It shouldn't be product documents, it should be country documents. We are executing the camel query to get all the documents that have the country name in their file name. It also means you will need to store documents with the country name in the file name. Otherwise, this won't work. Then we get the items, and then we execute the query, and that is when transfer will actually happen. So it's also very economical when it comes to conserving bandwidth. Now, I'm not going to copy and paste that into my application since we're already over time, I believe. I'm just going to show you the finished result of that. And as I said before, this step-by-step demo is available as a hands-on lab, so with all the resources. So if you want to play with that and do it, build it for yourself, then it's actually a quite fun exercise. Let's just see. This one is the finished version here. I only have documents for Germany and Poland because I did this session for the first time in Poland. Is it actually working? Could be wrong here. Whoops. Okay. The finished version isn't actually really working, so I need to fix that and show it to you in the break. But again, I hope after this session you have seen how easy it is to get started with Silverlight, the many options you have of connecting Silverlight and SharePoint, both backwards compatible and SharePoint 2010 only, and some of the value that Silverlight can bring to your SharePoint experience, because it's really a very, very nice addition to the stock SharePoint experience, and it will really excite your users. If they can work with their data in this interactive fashion, they will like that. If they can take away this web part on their desktop, they will like that. So again, hopefully after today, you will go away and play a little bit with Silverlight. Cool stuff, really cool stuff. And for business applications, lightweight business applications, this is certainly the way to go. I should have put my summary slide on there as well. And while my colleague is setting up for the next session, I will quickly fire up the completed application. One thing I can show you before we do that, actually, is a real-world example. Not just a demo example. Let me just see. It's this one here, actually. Now, this is a conference room, event room booking tool that we're using inside of Microsoft in Redmond. So in Redmond, we have Building 20, which is called the Platform Adoption Center, where customers can come to have hands-on labs, have trainings, have sessions and events. And any Microsoft employee can actually book an event in that Platform Adoption Center. There's a process for that, and the process involves selecting the dates, selecting how many people attend, then selecting the room equipment, and then providing billing information, because we internally we have to pay for these kinds of events. Now that's a pretty complex process, but the data is all stored on SharePoint. So what the team did here is they built a Silverlight application for end users to abstract away from the fact that there's a SharePoint in the back end. Because if you have to enter all that information in a SharePoint, can actually get not complex, but there's potential for error. So they built this Silverlight application, which usually is not running on SharePoint. It's just running on SharePoint here because that's my local development environment. But if I want to reserve my event, I'm only using that Silverlight application, and you can see that it has a pretty nice design. So let's reserve a lecture conference briefing room. I have to enter how many people I expect. Let's expect one. So that's the first step in my process. I have to select when it should happen. So it's helpfully giving me today as a starting point. By the way, usually this application runs in full screen mode, right? You can see how important that can be. If you only have it in a limited space here, it's actually quite hard to do. Now I'm supposed to be selecting my equipment. Let's see if it actually does that. Okay, seems that, here it is. So I have to select my room. Also a nice visual presentation, so let's take that room. I have to select equipment, so a projector would be nice. Also I might need somebody to help me with my problems, like my colleague here. And finally, I can confirm my event selection. I need to put in the, let's call it private roadshow. I need to put my email address in. Description, we'll forget that. I need to add some accounting information so that I can pay for my event. And that's it. Whoops. Okay. Test. No, I have to fill out everything. See, that's important. You don't want to skimp people on mandatory information. So it's actually... Whoop. Okay. All right. And now it's writing my reservation. And what it's actually doing is it's creating all the entries, one in a calendar library, one a document, a briefing document. Everything is being created in the back end, and when the administrator goes into his or her dashboard, they can see exactly what's been going on by using the standard SharePoint UI. Right? So if I now click done, first of all, this event should... I didn't actually know when I booked the event. We'll see. In March. Okay. Yeah, I should probably have put a little bit more attention on when I actually book my event. But again, it's just a principle. You see how that goes. Silverlight application in front of a SharePoint. User isn't even aware that there's a SharePoint behind that, but all the information is nevertheless in a various selection of lists inside of SharePoint. Very nice example, and there's many, many more of these examples out there. With that, we'll go to the next session where we go a little bit deeper into the Visual Studio 2010 developer tools for SharePoint development. So thank you very much. It was a long session. And I think we don't have a coffee break now, just 5 minutes while my colleague is setting up. So please don't go far away.